There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good afternoon and welcome. Thank you so much for joining us here on the special presentation of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Mr. Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good, buddy. I'm excited about today's program. I've had the unique opportunity to be a host on legendary talk show host Art Bell's program. Mm-hmm. I was a host on Coast to Coast AM. I was a host, his final host, on Midnight in the Desert before his death. And we have had the opportunity to work with two of the legends in the field, Art Bell, George Norrie, mm-hmm. of course, on the Mount Rushmore of paranormal radio. There is Long John Neble, who really kind of started this entire thing. And today we get to take somebody off of our bucket list that we have been wanting to speak to for a while. It's been a while since he's been on air. He had a personal situation and death in his family that took him from his long run with paranormal radio, but he is back. Ladies and gentlemen, Dark Air with Terry Carnation, an Audio Boom original podcast available everywhere that you stream your podcasts, is back on April 1st. Terry Carnation, the Pope of the paranormal, is known for his silken voice and his luxurious hair as much as he is for being the host of the late night AM radio call-in show Dark Air. And he is back, always open to possibilities and sharing his insights into the strange and unusual world around us. Darkness Radio is proud to present the legend, Mr. Terry Carnation. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you back on the airwaves. I can tell you, listening to you in the car rides home and the stories that your callers would share certainly inspired this program, Darkness Radio. And I hope you don't take offense in the fact that we followed in on the Dark Air premise with Darkness Radio. But it is such a pleasure to finally get a chance to talk to somebody that we've both revered for so long.
It's an honor to be an inspiration. And certainly I don't have a trademark over the word dark or darkness. So you're more than welcome to it. And congratulations, you two gentlemen, on your enormous success. I say the more people exploring mystery, the more people exploring possibility, the better.
For the newer generation that has come up watching programs like Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures and the Holzer Files, they have found this new paranormal paradigm. But some people, I know it's hard to believe, may not be familiar with Terry Carnation. So let's introduce our listeners around the world to you and tell us a little bit about your story. What drove your passion for the paranormal?
Thank you for asking, Dave. Just out of curiosity, before we get going, mm-hmm. what does Tim do exactly?
He does a very important element of this entire job. Tim, go ahead and explain what you do.
Well, see, I put my hand in Dave's back, and I operate Dave.
Oh.
Yeah.
He is the true puppet master of this program.
Puppet master, I see.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. That's why when Dave's talking, I don't necessarily talk. See, I can watch us.
Terry Carnation, our guest, legendary radio show host here to share his intel on his fascination with the supernatural.
That's truly impressive.
See how that works, Mr. Carnation? See?
That is impressive. That is impressive. The other thing, Tim, that I like about you is, well, you have two first names.
Do you trust people with two first names?
Oh, I trust people more with two first names.
Oh, good. Thank you. Yeah. I was worried about that.
Neither of you, have any hair on your head, however.
Well, that's because if you put the heads down and then you press them together, see?
Yeah, we make a complete ass of ourselves. It works out well. Plus,
oh, look at that.
You know, going into haunted locations, the biggest complaint people have is that spirits are constantly grabbing their hair and tugging it. This makes us a little bit more aerodynamic and easy to slip through the gauntlet of the supernatural.
Now, I'm not really a supernatural explorer, but if I were, you're suggesting that perhaps I wear a bald cap.
I think that, or perhaps just a really elegant bathing cap would be good, or shower cap if you'd like to go a little puffier.
Or, if I'm fully committed, shave my head.
It's only certain people that can pull that entire look off. But you know what? With the luxurious locks that you've got, I would say stick with it.
Yeah. God giveth and God taketh away, and God hath giveth you a very luxurious mane. I would stick with it.
He hath giveth me an excellent mane, indeed. Yeah. And he hath giveth you two first names.
Yes, yes.
Well, excellent, gentlemen. It's wonderful to get acquainted with you. Was there a question at the beginning of all this? I'm so sorry.
Your fascination with the paranormal, how did you get involved in this, and where did your passion begin?
Well, thank you again for asking, Dave, the puppet. We're going to go all the way back. My fascination with the paranormal, with the supernatural, with the unexplained, with the darkness, goes back to, really, to my earliest childhood. You see, gentlemen, and I haven't spoken about this very much, because my role, frankly, is a conversational lubricant. You know, if there's a conversation happening, I like to just take my lubricant and just spread it all over that conversation. So I rarely talk about my personal life, but I will say that, I was raised, do you remember the movie Ghost Dad with Bill Cosby?
Do we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, too bad, you know, Mr. Cosby is in some unfortunate circumstances, it looks like, but, which unfortunately has, probably tarnished the reputation of one of the greatest films of the 1980s.
Agreed. Agreed.
Well, I was raised by a spectral mother.
A spectral mother?
My mother had passed when I was quite young.
Mm-hmm.
And she raised me. She was there with me every day in the Carnation household. My pappy was away at work, and she would be the one cooking me the oatmeal. She would be the one making my bed. She would be the one cleaning up the cat poop from the courtyard.
Wow, spectral mothers do that as well.
I don't know if all of them do, but mine worked awfully hard for the money, with the money which was none. But and this was difficult because she was spectral, so she had a very difficult time holding on to animate objects. She had a very difficult time navigating the physical world. But she loved me. Oh, how she loved me, Dave. And, well, and I loved her, and she was there all the time. We would laugh. You know, we would laugh.
That's got to be a bit of a struggle as a growing boy and a teen who sometimes needs his privacy in his room, or perhaps on dates. You know, mothers always have that intuition as it is, but to know that you have a spectral mother that could appear anywhere at any time.
Yeah. I would say, like, Mom, knock on the door. And she would be like, I'm literally incapable of knocking on the door. And then I'm saying, well, say knock, knock, you know. When
excellent.
Valencia is over and we're playing tonsil hockey, the last thing I need is her walking through a door. Zoinks!
Talk about performance anxiety.
And it's affected me to this day. It's affected me to this day. Yes. I still have some trouble in the plumbing department, which I don't get into too much details, but thanks, Mom. And thanks, Dr. Freud.
You are reticent to really dip deeply into your story and your history with the supernatural, which is understandable. But, you know, with the current pandemic and people being locked indoors, I've done a lot of reading into biographies, and I've been fascinated with celebrity biographies. And this year alone, I've uncovered the fact, of course, Lucy Liu, Kesha, and Bobby Brown all admit to spectral sex. They've all had intercourse with ghosts. Sammy Hagar, in his book, talks about his brushes with ghosts and believes he was abducted by aliens. Barbara Eden, I Dream of Jeannie star and icon, talks of psychic premonitions that she believed helped launch her career. Demi Lovato and Miley Cyrus, of course, summoning UFOs. Kurt Russell was the first civilian pilot to call in on the Phoenix Lights while he was flying in that area. And even TV personality Rainn Wilson, star of The Office, discusses a haunted house in his best-selling biography, The Bassoon King. What do you make of the celebrities coming forth with these supernatural tales? Is it a cash grab? Is it a way to get, oh, notice me, we're in pandemic time? What do you think is going on? Or are we opening up to a new paradigm, and people are feeling freer to talk about these aspects of their world?
Excellent question. Excellent focus of conversation. Frankly, I haven't heard of any of those quote unquote celebrities except for Barbara Eden and Kurt Russell.
Understandable. You've been busy and immersed into your research and doing what you've done for so long. So I can understand that. But do you think that we are now in a time when we're seeing the Pentagon coming forth with information about UFOs? We're seeing brain surgeons talking about near-death experiences, and people are accepting more and more of the supernatural. Is there a new consciousness wave ready to crash on our shores?
Dave, you couldn't have put it any better. There is a new consciousness being birthed. It's coming down the birth canal. It's crowning. It's cresting. There's a pre-birth liquid is emerging before the actual birth. And this birth is of a new consciousness, a new awareness of what was previously dismissed as the playground of the imbeciles, of the folderol of the deluded. No, as a matter of fact, yes. As a matter of fact, 67% of all Americans say that they've had spectral sex.
67%?
Yes. That's it. Yes, bing that. 23% say that they have been abducted by aliens, you know? And of that 23%, 95% have been anally probed. That's a very high percentage of anal probes by the alien abduction. I don't know what their obsession with the human anus is. I just simply is one of the greatest mysteries of my show. I'm sure you've encountered it as well. I don't understand, but I'm game.
For a probing?
Yes. I mean, I like to just put it out there. There's anyone listening up there? I'm open to the... I don't even need anesthesia. Let's do this. I have nothing to hide.
For our alien neighbors, we're beaming this signal out to the universe. I'm sure somebody's listening. Terry Carnation.
Who do you think invented Facebook?
Well, you're right. It's just a way to cull the herd together into one place, isn't it?
Thank you. Yes, but I do believe that it is a new era of consciousness. And it's been very gratifying. I imagine it has been for you two as well, especially about the government and the UFOs. And for the first time, we have fighter pilots. We have the Air Force. We have generals. We have generals, folks, coming out and saying UFOs are real. Here is the footage. This is absolutely unexplainable by any human technology. And for someone who has been fighting this fight in the basement of KSB radio for 37 years, it is beyond gratifying.
What do you make of the fact that, as conspiracies go, that many of these generals and astronauts coming forward with these stories also were right during the height of hallucinogenics and marijuana abuse. Is there any chance that these experiences are nothing more than a drug-induced haze that they still believe and cling to as reality?
Well, I know, you know, speaking personally again, that I have danced with Bigfoot. Not just seen Bigfoot, not just interacted with Bigfoot. I partook in a ceremony with a Sasquatch tribe. Now, that same evening, did I take an ayahuasca suppository? Yes, I did. That doesn't make it any less real.
I would agree. I mean, you've had the experience. You've lived that moment. You know it to be true. But there are so many people around the world that have yet to see these things and experience them. Now, you've communed with Sasquatch on ayahuasca, which must have been an amazing moment. But, you know, there's a new documentary on Hulu that comes out on April 24th called Sasquatch, which talks about three murders that took place that they attribute to a Bigfoot rending people limb from limb amongst marijuana plants. Is this the Sasquatch you know? Is this the Bigfoot species you've come into contact with? Or are we about to uncover and realize that there is a more evil subset of these beings that exist amongst us?
Wow. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. I was not aware of the documentary or of these murders. Now, for the Sasquatch that I interacted with, they're a gentle, peaceable people. I want to say people, not people.
Beings.
Genus unknown. Mm. I can't even conceive of a Sasquatch committing murder. There's something fishy going on here. And oh, someone was rent asunder in the middle of marijuana plants. Mm. I mean, did no one see Breaking Bad? It was probably the cartels.
Now, Tim,
cartels dressing as Bigfoot and rending, when it was probably some gentleman named Poncho who was like 6'7" and used to lift weights in the yard.
Tim, again, not having any skin in the game for the Sasquatch, is terrified of...
plenty of skin in the game.
Well, I do. Yeah.
He is more terrified, though, of the Loch Ness Monster, which he believes to be nothing but a carnivorous creature that has terrified him since youth. Tim, maybe you could explain this to Terry, and is there a way to get over that fear?
I'm still stuck on ayahuasca coming in a suppository. I didn't know that was available.
Bing it.
Got to open yourself up in many ways to these possibilities, Tim.
Open yourself up in many ways.
If I would have known it came in suppository form, I would have opened myself up years ago. Mm-hmm. Back to Loch Ness Monster. I haven't gone swimming in years because I am afraid I might get a little Nessie snoot in the old toot, if you know what I mean. Yeah, I just don't,
does
Mr. Kearney.
You in swimming pools as well?
Just yes.
Like when Jaws came out, people were afraid to even go in a swimming pool?
Exactly. Public pools especially, because I'm afraid I might still feel that same sensation. Mm-hmm. I can't. Well, I just can't.
They believe that cryptid creatures may be actually accessing portals from other dimensions to enter our realm. So if Bigfoot and Chupacabra can do this easily, Mothman and the New Jersey Devil, why not Loch Ness Monster being able to teleport from a dark Scottish loch into the Minneapolis Municipal Pool? I understand your fears.
I believe Nessie feeds on chlorine like candy.
The drug of choice of cryptids. I understand
that. Yeah.
So you do not hold with the possibility of Nessie being some kind of dinosaur.
Plus, I'm buoyant like an inner tube. I mean, I would just float on the top of the water, and then Nessie just boom, right through.
Send you flying.
Yep. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like an irrational fear, but really, there's some meat behind it.
No.
Speaking of meat behind it, there's a news story breaking in Australia, Mr. Carnation. An Adelaide man who violently attacked his mother because he believed she was an alien. He will be detained and supervised in a mental health facility now for more than a decade. The man assaulted the woman in 2018 in a brutal manner that included dousing her in petrol and pushing her head into a freezer. The series of attacks left the woman with life-threatening injuries that required treatment in a hospital intensive care unit for 2 months. She also had her lung punctured with a wooden broomstick and required reconstructive surgery to her pelvis. Her son, who was age 33 at the time of the incident, was previously found not guilty of attempted murder because of mental incompetence. This is a terrifying tale of our current situation. What do you believe is the best way to handle if you have come into contact with someone you believe to be an alien? Obviously, puncturing their lung with a broom handle and pouring petrol on them is not acceptable and frowned upon by the law in Australia.
I'm just wondering about the young man's tactics. Broomstick as a weapon? Hello? Have you not heard of a broadsword? or a spear? You do much more than puncture a lung. Also, petrol is to be ignited. She was doused in petrol and then put in the freezer? What was the thinking there? He must have been very deluded with his fear. But I feel bad for the gentleman. I feel like I should visit him. I feel like we should be writing him letters and supporting him. We've all seen Invasion of the Body Snatchers. We all know that aliens walk among us. We know this, folks. Come on.
With all due respect, Mr. Carnation, as a child, my mother loved to make us petrol popsicles. They were delicious.
Explains the premature balding, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We know that aliens walk among us. They take human form. Sometimes, yes, lizard form, Mothman form. Frankly, I think she deserves to die, or at least be put away for a very, very long time. So
if we encounter an alien, not knowing what their real need or desire here is on Earth, you're saying attack mode first, ask questions later.
Absolutely, especially in Australia. Oh, that place is chock-a-block with aliens. Just listen to how they talk. Hello? Hello? Hey, come in over here. Oh, what's that going on, mate? It's like it's not even English. I don't know what it is. It's disgusting.
Can I ask Mr. Carnation a question? You too, I see, have noticed that the English don't speak English very well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right?
I've been saying this for years.
And their cities, is that even English? Have you noticed some of their cities don't even make sense as far as names?
Darth Hamptonshire Derby Village.
Right?
Exactly, yes. Hampshirewich upon Illich upon, I don't know, upon what? Upon a dung heap.
Right, what is that?
You know, why can't you name a city like Dayton or Scranton or Fresno?
Exactly.
You know, good, solid English names. Milwaukee.
Right.
You bring up some interesting aspects, of course, and having been out there and hearing these tales for so long, we had a listener who has been following along with you, and I want to make sure that I get the question properly. Bart L. asks, a question for Mr. Carnation. Have you heard of a place called Shroot Farms and of the legend of the ghost of the three-legged polygamist that haunts the property?
I'm not aware of this, but that sounds like a fascinating story. I welcome you to call into Dark Air. Would love to take your calls and hear more about this Scroot Farm and the three-legged polygamist. Sounds fascinating.
It's strange, right?
I was not aware. Yeah.
Starting to notice that there, you know, you've got Bigfoot marijuana fields, the spectral three-legged polygamists haunting a beet farm. Is there something to the tilling of the earth, the upsetting of Mother Earth and Gaia that is creating these spirits, these beings to come forward in a more aggressive nature?
Earth will have her revenge, certainly. Mother Earth, Gaia, the forces, the ancient ones, they will have their revenge. We can't pave this planet fast enough, apparently. And some dark times are coming. Some darkness, dark air, dark times are ahead.
God bless skyscrapers.
I know you've got a very tight time frame here. I just have one other quick story. There's a woman that has purchased what
you. I thought you were going to say I had a tight anus.
I don't know that to be true, but after a probing, let me know what the results are. Mm-hmm. A woman has bought a haunted doll that she says leaves dozens of people feeling nauseous with headaches and chest pains, simply even just by looking at the photograph. And we'll have this article up at darknessradio.com. Just click on the news tab. The creepy doll, who it's since been claimed is haunted by the spirit of a woman named Peggy, is also known to have made those who come into contact with her ill and has now been locked in a cabinet at the Zach Bagans Haunted Museum in Las Vegas. Back in 2014, the paranormal investigator Jane Harris was called out by a woman who claims that since buying this vintage doll, she'd been experiencing all sorts of weird goings-on at home and was unable to sleep. The woman became so spooked that she wrapped the three-foot-tall doll up in old carpet. Is old carpet a good way to bind spirits? Mr. Carnation, do you believe that that's the way to keep them from freeing themselves and doing more damage?
I hadn't thought about the options of what to wrap an evil doll in.
And nylon pile. That might make sense. It is so synthetic.
Pile. Yeah, yeah. That is true. I would say, like, why not tin foil? Just get some, just a nice foil wrap. Put it in the freezer. Boom, problem solved. But yeah, there's, I would say perhaps visit a local priest and get a holy shroud, counteract the evil powers, the evil spirits. If there's a shaman nearby, perhaps a Native American holy man or medicine man, get a sacred ceremonial blanket. This is a first for me. I'm so tickled to come on your show because so many of these issues, so many of these questions I hadn't heard before, but. Listeners, if you're listening, please write in to Dark Air and to Darkness Radio. We'd love to hear from you. What would you wrap your evil doll in?
Seems like a good question. People can't, you know, we come upon them all the time. This was a doll that was given to me that is reportedly haunted, and I used as a trigger object on the Holzer files to try to interact with the spirit of Jackie, the little girl ghost. Tim and I have been long since selling arm's length of holy bubble wrap that we acquired from, we were told, the Vatican itself. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Vatican bubble wrap?
Yes, and it's getting harder and harder to find. My connection, this guy that I meet underneath the viaduct that sells it from his trunk.
His name's Luigi.
He's not always there.
Yeah. Oh, Irving, yes.
Yes.
He's been, he told me to tell anyone who was asking that he's had some, so his aunt is very sick. So he's in Reno for a couple months. Mm. But every bubble of that wrap is filled with the breath of the Pope.
That makes sense. No spirit can get out of that.
You can't pierce that. You can't.
Right.
You can't overcome that. That's power.
Mr. Carnation, you are back. Your show debuts April 1st. It is, I got to tell you, it is amazing to have you back and sharing these stories and having your callers open up the eyes of the world to the sometimes unsettling and unusual aspects of the unseen around us. What made you decide to come back after all this time and re-engage?
Well, as you know, I went through a very dark period of time after the loss of my wife, Zelon Carnation. There were some mishaps, some misadventures, and some tragedy along the way. But I felt I was ready, you know? I felt I was ready. I am incomplete without my fans, without my listeners. They are what makes me whole. And you know, in consultation with my therapist, Dr. Norman Kesden, who said to me, he looked me in the eye and he said, Terry, don't do this. Don't go back on the air. You're not ready. You're about to have another nervous breakdown. This is, you're asking for it, buddy. Please, if you can listen to one thing that I tell you, one thing out of all of these sessions, don't go back on the air. You're not ready yet. And I said simply, Dr. Kesden, you're an idiot. And I'm going back on the air. Thank you, but no thank you. And problem solved. Pretty much everything he tells me to do, I do the opposite. It's like opposite world.
What could go wrong with that plan? I mean, it makes sense. You know your strengths. You know where we lie. And listen, doing what we do is always going to make people question our sanity as it is. We have a... Are you okay? I'm noticing you looking...
How they work. It's amazing. The mandible.
You know, this is why they got to listen to this guy. The insights that he brings you, the new ways to look at things that have become mundane to the rest of us. It's important. Dark Air is back April 1st. You can follow at Dark Air and at Terry Carnation on most social media. Mr. Carnation, with your permission, I'd like to play a clip of your program as we say goodbye. Thank you so much for joining us and merging the Carnation Nation with the Army of Darkness Radio today in this historic first. So thank you for being a part of our world and entertaining us and always being a light of sunshine and laughter to the world around us in a weary time.
Sunshine and laughter. I've never heard that before. But Dave, Dennis, thank you so much for having me. This has been it's been a sheer delight. And lo and behold, I've learned something. So you can't beat that.
You cannot, folks. Make sure you tune in. There's no reason to not listen to Dark Air with Terry Carnation and all of the fantastic guests he's had. Now, without further ado, because the world does not need more ados, here is a look at Terry Carnation and Dead Air. Dark Air. Sorry, not Dead Air. It's been Dead Air for far too long, but you're back now with Dark Air.
Nice save.
Thank you.
The unknown.
I have proof that aliens live among us.
The supernatural.
Have you ever had any kind of experience with haunted objects?
The conspiratorial.
Every time a mosquito bites you, it's a new chip that is being implanted into your bloodstream.
One man explored it all, became a legend, then disappeared. Now he has returned to host the late night talk show that made him a god incarnate.
Okay, listen, I can't do this anymore. I can't keep up the fakey, spooky trailer voice.
On April 1st, the world will hear my new show, Dark Air with Terry Carnation.
Terry Carnation, 1 billion listeners.
Mr. Carnation, you're going to burn in hell.
Can't believe I'm in Terry Carnation's apartment.
I am the host of Dark Air.
I've never heard of it.
This is the true story of my triumphant return to host the late-night AM radio call-in show, Dark Air, and the mystery of a caller that may be my dead wife.
Harry, I'm scared.
Was my beloved reaching out from beyond the grave? Or was I engulfed in the greatest conspiracy since the hosts of The View were discovered to be robots?
I know why you're here, Carnation. You best leave this place.
I, Terry Carnation, will be your guide to the paranormal.
It's a mistake anyone could make. You thought you had aliens in your mini fridge.
Taking calls from concerned citizens.
Like my boyfriend is a werewolf.
Lord Satan has asked for me specifically?
He's heard your show, and he's a hate listener.
What is the name of the demon inside of you, Sally?
With special guest appearances by certain bizarre individuals.
From The Office, Angela Kinsey!
Happy to be here!
You are Jason Reitman.
Yeah, can I help you?
Hey, Riverside Comic Con, it's me, your old pal, Kevin Smith.
I'm internationally beloved actor, Sam Neill.
I'm not actually Nathan Fillion. I'm actually an alien symbiote.
The radio show, my life, the mystery. You'll hear it all. You'll be breathing in my dark air.
This is so cool!
Are you saying that chemtrails are actually alien semen?
I don't want any of that Terry Carnation stink on that chair.
Rainn Wilson is Terry Carnation in Dark Air, dropping April 1st, featuring Yvette Nicole Brown, Al Madrigal, Karin Soni, Tom Lennon, and many, many more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
If you dare. Hey, you know what? I'm starting to like that fakey trailer voice.
Welcome back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. Special thanks to our guest, Rainn Wilson, for joining us in character as Terry Carnation, the host of the new Audio Boom special, 14-part episodes of Dark Air, a new paranormal-themed call-in show, comedy program. It's going to be a lot of fun. Check it out for yourself. It was cool. What a fun little moment.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was good fun. Yeah. Good fun.
We got more stories to share. We've got a brand new Theater of the Mind coming up in a few minutes. I do want to get into a couple of the stories that I briefly touched on when we were talking to Terry Carnation. Going back to this doll, and again, I'll have these stories up and on our Facebook page, or not on our Facebook, but at Darkness Radio. Under the news tab, you'll be able to find it there. The full story on the haunted doll. A woman bought a haunted doll that she says left dozens of people with nausea, headaches, and chest pains just by looking at its photo. So yes, you can go see the images of this in the article. There's also some video. The creepy doll, who has since been claimed is haunted by the spirit of a woman named Peggy, is also said to have made those who come into contact with her ill, and now has to be locked in a cabinet. Back in 2014, paranormal investigator Jane Harris was called out by a woman who claimed that since buying a vintage doll, she'd been experiencing all sorts of weird goings-on at home and was unable to sleep. The woman became so spooked, she wrapped the 3-foot-tall doll up in some old carpet and put it in a shed outside her home, and then called in the experts. Jane told Lad Bible that, "I was contacted by the lady who told me she had a doll. The doll didn't have a name at this point, and she said she needed help. She said she bought the doll at a flea market and has ever since said she's had terrible luck. She hasn't been able to sleep. She lived on her own but was hearing footsteps in the house and could hear the bathroom light clicking on and off during the night." After receiving the email, Jane, who presents on the TV show in England, Help, My House is Haunted, visited the woman's home with a psychic investigator named Hazel to check it out. The woman hadn't slept for weeks, Jane said. She opened the door and said, "It's round there, and I'm not letting it in the house." I went back into the house, interviewed the woman, and agreed to take the doll to do some research and set up some experiments and find out what was happening. And that's how the doll came into my care. But within 4 days of the doll being in her home, Jane began to feel ill. "It was a bit of a mystery illness," Jane explained. I just felt completely drained and completely fatigued. I got to the point after about 2 weeks where I actually couldn't get out of bed. I felt like if you imagine your body as a battery just zapped completely, I just had nothing left. Hazel came to me and said, "You have considered it could be something to do with the doll." And of course, it had crossed my mind, but I was a bit dubious. However, 3 days after Hazel removed the doll, Jane was completely back to normal. She said, "I couldn't deny that this was strange, so I did some work with the doll, but nothing really happened until I put a photograph of the doll on my Facebook page, and that's when things got weird. At that point, the doll had no name connected to it, and I just took a photograph of the doll's face and posted it on my page with no information, nothing at all." That was about 8 p.m., and by the following morning, I had over 80 messages and emails from people saying that they'd had unusual experiences after looking at the photo. Some people were having really terrible headaches, chest pains. Others were complaining that their dogs were barking and spinning in circles. They were hearing footsteps. Light bulbs were burning out. There was just something really weird going on. Around this time, a psychic medium got in touch with Jane to tell her that a lady called Peggy was haunting the doll, who was restless, frustrated, and had been persecuted in life. Peggy's notoriety eventually caught the eye of U.S. paranormal investigator Zach Bagans, who contacted Jane and asked if she'd fly over to Las Vegas with Peggy so he could find out more and maybe put her on display at Zach Bagans' haunted museum. And that is where she is now, Jane said. She's locked away. The decision was made to give her her own room. She's in a cabinet in that room with cameras on her permanently. Zach has people sign a waiver telling people they enter at their own risk. People have to take that on board when going to visit Peggy, the haunted doll. I don't know. I'm looking at the picture. I don't feel sick yet, but, The day is young. It's a creepy looking doll, though.
Now, you've seen Peggy in person, I take it, right?
I think I did when I was out there filming the Halloween special, but I can't remember. There were so many dolls in so many different rooms. I don't remember all of them, and we were there for a job, so it moved along pretty quickly.
I have seen Peggy in person. When I went out there for I went out for AEW Double or Nothing, and I stopped by the Haunted Museum. I went out there with Blue Meanie. Blue Meanie and I went out there to the Haunted Museum. Had some downtime after or between Starcast, Days of Starcast, which is the convention that surrounded Double or Nothing. And he wanted to go over and see the Haunted Museum, so he did. And that was one of the things that Meanie wasn't, I don't think he was too sure whether he wanted to go see it or not. He was pretty brave. He's, don't get me wrong, he's a brave dude. But that was one of those things where I think he didn't, I don't know that he wanted to, but he did, you know, he bucked up and did everything. And I just, you know, I, none of that stuff really, you know, gets me at all. You know, I pretty much don't have any fear when it comes to that stuff. That's not the one that's hooked up to the Frank's box, right?
I don't recall. I was there to do the Halloween special and I was positioned outside most of it. What's his name? Josh Gates and I got a quick in and out tour, and we took a photograph in one of the doll rooms, but I wish I had had more time to visit. I have not had a chance to really get in there and take a look around. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So if I remember right, I think I'm trying to remember if Peggy is the one that's hooked up to the Frank's box or if Peggy's just the one that's in the glass case. But yeah, there's one that's hooked up to the Frank's box that supposedly it hollers and swears and you hear the demonic voice and they only send you in a couple people at a time. That one just shut down when I walked in. It wouldn't say a thing, but the minute I left, boy, it treated that next group really, really evil. Like it just started swearing and cursing, but it shut up when I walked in. So evidently, I have a fatherly way, or I intimidate the hell out of that haunted doll.
Or the ghost was just having nothing to do with you.
Yeah, or just didn't. Yeah. I'm trying to remember if that's Peggy or if that's a different doll. But I don't know.
He's got a bunch of them in there. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. If I remember right, Peggy really didn't do much when I showed up. So there you go. That's my.
Maybe we're just immune from all the protection people have sent prayers to us for years. Maybe that's part of it.
That may be. I don't know. I have a bunch of different levels of protection. Now that I say that, some haunted doll is going to get on my back and ride me into a ditch and kill me. I don't know. Yeah.
All right. We got more stories. Phobias. Hannah Mae Lee recalls a frightening paranormal experience while filming the movie Pitch Perfect. It's a frightening enough experience just being in Pitch Perfect. Hannah Mae Lee tapped into her childhood fear for her new role in the movie Phobias. In an interview with Too Fab, the actress opened up about her fear of paranormal activity and recalled a frightening experience from when she shot the first Pitch Perfect film. Phobias follows a group of five people who all suffer from unique fears. In the film, Lee's character Sammy has a vehophobia or a veophobia, the fear of driving. I have experienced in kind of the paranormal fear, I guess, Lee said when asked how she prepared for the project. In the film, my car starts to break down. Basically, things start to happen that I don't do, nor the Caprice did. So there's obviously some sort of thing or spirit or phenomena that's taking over. For me, it was not a far stretch because I have a crazy imagination. And since I was little, I always thought that there were things behind me or under my bed. Even when people just walk in all of a sudden, I'm like, I just kind of freak out. It came to me naturally, she continued. I mean, when I was younger and up until recently, I've always been scared of paranormal things instead of things that you should be frightened of. Lee revealed she came face to face with her fear when she was filming Pitch Perfect in Baton Rouge back in 2011. There was this incident when we were shooting the first Pitch Perfect in our hotel that we were staying at. Me and some of the cast members would have these really weird dreams, she recalled. We just shared them on our way to set, and there was this one time where a lot of people were going to go to New Orleans. We were shooting in Baton Rouge. And I took a nap, and I had this crazy nightmare. It was terrible. And also, I felt like there was this being or some sort of thing in the room. And I think that night there was a shooting in New Orleans. I ended up not going because I got so physically ill, she continued. I don't know if it was from the dream or psychosis or whatever, but it was crazy. And this being in my room kind of feeling kept haunting me. I felt like it was kind of a haunting throughout the night. And, you know, like production's like, well, can we switch rooms? But I kind of wanted to stay there and feel it out. I guess as weird as that sounds, Lee said the paranormal activity finally calmed down around the third or fourth week of the 3-month shoot. That sort of paranormal experience, it's frightening at first, very frightening, she explained. I'm just kind of trying not to freak out because I'm like, why do I feel this way? Is something really here and is it trying to scare me or is just something to do or is it just something trying to do its own thing? It was weird because those dreams kept happening, she added. Even after I came home, I would look up things online and there'd be some crazy incidents. There's something very spiritual, of course, about Baton Rouge and New Orleans, she continued. Meanwhile, Lee, whose Pitch Perfect co-star Alexis Knapp also had a small role in Phobias, shared her thoughts on whether she'd be interested in doing a fourth Pitch Perfect film. And I don't care what her thoughts are on that because I don't want to see a fourth Pitch Perfect film. So
does anybody really?
Just the cast, I'm sure. No, it was a sweet little movie series. So Britney Spears is back in the news. In the February 24th episode of the We Need to Talk About Britney podcast, Spears' friend and former makeup artist Julianne Kay shared that the Sunset Plaza home Britney lived in was haunted, and apparently the haunting was disturbing enough to force the musician to leave the mansion. Kay told the podcast Britney called her up and shared that she had a Reiki healing at the house after a crazy partying weekend and needed to relax. He left, and she swears to God that he opened some spirit portal or something, and these bad spirits had come in, and they were trying to, like, push her down the stairs or something crazy, said Kay. The makeup artist said the spirits included a man and a woman who were very disturbed. Now, it gets even more interesting from there, Tim. Are you ready for this?
Ready.
It was so bad that Britney left, Kay added. She went to Casa del Mar Hotel to stay there and never went back to the house. She goes, I know you're going to think I'm crazy. I'm not crazy. I know what I saw. There was a man and a woman there. They were disturbed. Now, interestingly enough, actress Brittany Murphy moved into that home and died there about a year later in 2009. Her husband, if you remember, Tim, Simon, also died in that home after just a few months. The cause of death both included pneumonia and anemia. But that strange coincidence continues to puzzle Murphy's fans. And the New York Post reports, in the 11 years since Murphy and Monjack died, the property has been listed 10 different times and continues to sell. So that's kind of a strange aspect of this. Was Britney, because of this Reiki practitioner, did he open up an energy rift that they were actually sensing the spirits from the future of Britney Murphy and her husband in this lost, panicked experience?
You know, I don't want to come in and pee on your parade and tell you it's raining. There was also a story at one time about that home, and they thought that black mold might have been the reason why both of them died as well. That there was some sort of black mold infestation that got into their lungs and it actually killed both of them.
Right. Well, and I understand that there has been some findings on that, but that doesn't eliminate the fact that there was paranormal activity in a man and a woman acting distraught and kind of crazy. And, you know, Brittany Murphy and her husband died there a year afterwards. It's strange to me. I wonder if they were encountering ghosts from the future, in essence. I don't know. It's a very cool, very weird, unusual story. We have a couple of emails here, Tim. Hello, Dave and Tim and Tim and Dave. I haven't written in a long while, so in order to make it up to you, I'll be taking all of you on a small tour of my experiences here in the not-so-great white north, but at times somewhat similar state of Wisconsin. We begin with a trip to the Kemper Center and Durkee Mansion site in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Around 2007-ish, situated on the shores of the Great Lake of Michigan, the Civil War-era compound, which features include a chapel, mansion, and observatory, is legendary in the area for ghostly hauntings and other such shenanigans. Shenanigans, she says, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he says, I'm sorry, it's John. In case not enough of the audience has heard of this place, allow me a quick history. The property began in the rumblings of the Great War of Northern Aggression as the private residence of Wisconsin's first U.S. Senator, Charles Durkee, in 1861, but transitioned to an Episcopal boarding school for young women in 1865. 6 years later, it was named Kemper Hall in honor of Bishop Jackson Kemper. 7 years after that, the Episcopal Sisters of St. Mary took over. I had spent years in the company of my pre-marriage wife listening to the ghostly stories of this place, ranging from the spirit of the nun often called Margaret Clare, who was allegedly pushed either down the stairs or from the top floor window of the observatory tower, depending on the version. I have heard both, by a group of disgruntled young women, spirits of some of the students who resided there, even some of the guard dogs that were said to have roamed the perimeter of the grounds at one time. Well, this one autumn evening, I and my pre-wife Sarah, her brother, and a mutual friend of ours went out to the Kemper Center for some spooky fun and tried our luck at experiencing some of these haunts. This was my first time at the center. After a quick tour of the western face of the compound, which featured the observatory, and a few moments to observe the heights from which Margaret Clare was said to have fallen from, we took a break in front of the chapel, which sits on the northwest side of the building. Once there, Sarah took a seat on the front steps and lit a cigarette, telling us the first time she herself had visited the grounds after hours with a former boyfriend and had heard the disembodied sounds of a dog growling near the very spot in which she sat. Impressed, the three of us boys, who were standing in a semicircle with our backs to the tree-speckled open ground of the Kemper's front yard, wondered aloud what it might have sounded like. Almost immediately, an audible growl of snarling canines came from behind us. Sarah, having heard this before, simply gestured with an impressed look on her face toward the front yard. Hear the sound and came out. She had an impressed look on her face toward the front yard where the sound had come from, saying, just like that, the rest of us simply turned around to see nothing. 100 feet away, there was one of those yellowish, before the wonders of LED for all of you youngins out there, street light on a nearby Third Avenue that effectively lit the entirety of the center's front yard for us. Only the trees existed, but these were young and thin, too narrow to obscure an animal, which sounded like it was only 20 feet away. Sufficiently impressed myself, I can't speak for anyone else there, I quietly shook the shivers from my spine as we moved along the north side of the grounds. There, we took in the curious and head-shaking sight of Sarah's brother chasing a skunk, which had been sniffing around the small garden there. Why he did that is still unknown to us, but he did somehow avoid getting sprayed. Good thing, because he would have been walking home if he had been. Anyway, other small things occurred while we were there. We could hear faint organ music playing from inside the chapel, but we brushed it off as either a timed organ or some bored individual having some late night fun with the ivories. Our friend at one point had wandered into the arboretum only to come running back in terror, claiming to have heard a chain on the other side of the door dragging itself across the room. But the one thing that had me feeling a bit off was on the east side of the building, where it was told to me that a young woman could be seen from time to time in the windows there, staring out at whomever would be passing by. I had taken too long a look at the windows here and found myself separated from the group, who were moving about 50 feet away or so back to the car. I began to move quickly back to them when I heard some strange sounds behind me. It sounded like leaves rhythmically blowing across the asphalt pavement, and as the breeze along the lake had picked up some of these leaves, I thought nothing really of this until I felt the need to turn around to confirm my suspicion, and the sounds stopped. The breeze hadn't, but everything else had. Somewhat weirded out, I turned back around and resumed my walk to the group. Then I heard it again. This time, I was sure it sounded like the tap, tap, tap of girls' dress shoes. And it was in the rhythm of my steps, small steps, following close behind me. I turned again. Nothing. Again. The breeze was still moving, but nothing else was. I picked up my pace and quickly rejoined the rest of the group in the car, at which point I simply got out and put the keys into the ignition, giving out one last glimpse at the empty parking lot we had been crossing. In a follow-up, I got into a conversation with a coworker at a famous Kenosha area car manufacturer. Note, it was the old AMC plant, then Chrysler engine plant, before it was torn down in 2011. And the topic of the Kemper Center came up. In this discussion, this man, who is a lifelong resident of Kenosha, confirmed that there were indeed guard dogs on the premises of the center, and that those dogs were buried on the property underneath the north side garden area near where we were hearing the growls and snarls. I have more, but since this one may have gotten a little long, I'll save that for another time. Just kidding. That's what this letter says, Tim. John, our next stop in this paranormal parade of tales takes us to said car manufacturing plant circa early 2010. At this point in time, I was enjoying my time on second shift as a forklift operator in one of the warehousing buildings on site. But since I preferred to use the forklifts from the other side of the plant, I was en route to my work area via the old area that had housed the 4.0-liter straight six engine assembly line. I wasn't expecting anything out of the ordinary as I made my way south down the eastern wall of the place, but I soon experienced something quite wild when a woman suddenly appeared from the left side of the mast, diving to her right or my left to a door I was about to pass by. The woman, whose face I could not see, had long straight brown hair that went past her shoulders and was a slim build. I hit the brakes, bringing the 5,000-pound forklift to a skidding halt, and hopped off. Sure, I had just nearly hit someone who I had not been able to see. I was yelling an apology and was already in my throat when I whipped around the mast to find nothing. There was no woman. There was nothing. By now, I had been immersed in the paranormal for some time, but even this had shaken me. The adrenaline surge was waning, and as I looked up and down the hall in confusion, the vision of the woman had been so real, I was sure I had seen a real person. The door she seemed to have been trying to get to had only been feet from where I had begun to break, and now was only an arm's length or so away from the mast of the lift. I rushed over and opened it, thinking she must have made it out, even though in my mind's eye, no such thing occurred. Sure enough, the area immediately outside the door was void of all living souls. I went back inside and climbed back on the forklift, taking an extra few seconds to compose myself. After a moment or two, I restarted the forklift and went about my night shift. Some hours later, I was able to consult with one of the old timers who had been there for over 30 years on whether or not there were any deaths on the grounds. He said there had been a few and specified one young woman who had been inadvertently speared by a forklift over in the old 4.0-liter area. Since we had been outside near the building of my siding, I asked if he could point out the general area where this happened. He assured me he could do more than that and pointed at the very door I had seen the apparition earlier in the day. He then asked me why, but I didn't tell him. Something told me that I would have gotten a strange reputation of sorts at the place if it was revealed that I was seeing things while operating heavy equipment. So, is it time to leave you hanging like a piece of forgotten laundry for a next time? No. Are you ready for a third story? I thought you might, and since this one parallels one of Dave's own experiences with paranormal pussycats, I thought it would be fun to end on as a fun note. For this final story of the day, I'm a bit fuzzy on the time period, but I believe it was somewhere in the area as the same woman in the previous story. My wife, Sarah, had a pair of female cats at the time who favored the basement as their base of operations for the inevitable feline takeover of the human world and would often go there after landing with a thump from one of the countertops in the kitchen. Their passage, visible only from the couch in the living room, well, at some point, some spectral kitty must have wandered in because we began to hear the thump of a cat landing on the linoleum of the kitchen, but no cat was seen wandering either to or from the basement steps or into the living room. We also heard a clearly male cat yowl from inside an empty closet in our bedroom at one point as well. My suspicions of a ghostly visitor were confirmed by the sight of an unknown short-haired cat, gray and white in color, curiously staring at me from around the corner of the doorway of the kitchen as I passed by one day. Thinking it was Cleo, my wife's short-haired tabby, who had a gray and white hair, I said hello to her. My wife, who was sitting on the couch facing the kitchen, immediately asked me why I had said hello to the cat in the kitchen when she was actually laying on the couch by her, and it was verified beyond a shadow of a doubt or so later when I woke up one afternoon and went to work to make coffee. Sorry, some of these stories, I don't understand the jumps. I was in the middle of rinsing the coffee pot when I not only heard the tea kettle thump of a non-existent cat jumping to the floor to my left, but felt the vibrations of the impact, which would have normally given me pause had it not been for the fact that I was still groggy from sleep. So I instead looked down at the empty space at my side and said, "Hey, kitty," directing my energy and focus at it. What came next did make me stop in my tracks. About a second after I greeted it, I felt the hair, warmth, and girth of a cat rubbing itself on my leg, almost as though the animal was appreciative of me acknowledging its presence. I would have thought it was imagining it had I not been holding down at my leg and looking down at it as it was happening. It lasted only a handful of seconds, but the tactile nature of the encounter was fascinating and incredible. Nothing really weird ever happened again in the house involving this cat or other than the occasional jumping from the countertops, and soon those ceased as well. Was the cat satisfied that someone living had once again affirmed its existence, or had it moved on? I don't know, but I hope you two have enjoyed the stories today. I have more as I can deliver them, including a doozy of an encounter with a wooden shelf that had a reputation for flinging itself around the basement where it was where it resided. That comes from John in Janesville. Well, thank you, John and Janesville. We'd love to hear more of your stories. Just make sure that you read them out loud to yourself and that they read and are cohesive and smooth in reading. That's all I ask, people, Tim.
Yeah.
That's all I'm asking. Yeah. That's all I ask. Just that. Just that one little thing, Tim. Mm-hmm. Read it out loud! All right. UFOs spotted in South Haven, Mississippi. Well, South Haven, Mississippi, a southern Mississippi father and son believe they may have seen something from out of this world above their neighborhood late Sunday night. David Howell said he was getting something out of his car at the corner of Bridgewater and Hackberry when he looked up and saw a formation of several bright round lights that appeared to be dancing in the sky. Everything went through my mind. Is this UFOs or aliens? Howell said. Howell yelled for his father to come outside and began recording the lights on his cell phone. His father, James Howell, said they counted at least 10 of these brightly lit orbs in the sky and said they were too big to be drones. One of them was a lot bigger than the other nine. They were going north by northwest, and they would change positions, you know, James Howell said. The Howell's neighborhood is just a few miles from the Memphis International Airport. In fact, jets were flying above us Monday afternoon. We contacted the airport to see if someone could explain the lights, but have not heard back from anyone so far. And we have not been able to speak to anyone with the FAA to find out if there were any drones in the area. The South Haven Police Department told us that they had not received any calls about the lights. Memphis police have not gotten back to us either. The timestamp on David Howell's cell phone shows the video was captured at just after 10 p.m. I can't believe nobody else got video or called and said, "Hey, we see something. This is strange," David Howell said. So the breaking news is they believe it is a cadre, Tim, of Chinese lanterns that had been released nearby.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that could be it. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We've got a brand new Theater of the Mind. Let's enjoy it right now.
It's time again for our descent into the dark hives in this week's Theater of the Mind. Turned Away, the very scary real-life situation of Philip Gellner. My story begins about 3 years ago. I would reluctantly attend local metaphysical events and expos with my wife as a way to show her support for her passion. I personally was not a believer in any of it, but it meant something to her, and it seemed like a very small price to pay to attend and keep my wife happy. After a few months, I acquiesced to my wife and allowed her to set up a mediumship reading for me. We approached the practitioner, and after a few brief pleasantries with my wife, she turned to shake my hand. When we touched hands, she popped her head backwards like she'd been punched, and then she let go of my hand immediately and informed my wife that she would not be able to do this reading. She suddenly felt very ill. Thinking nothing of it, we said our goodbyes and moved on. We tried again with another medium a few weeks later at a local mind-body-spirit expo near our home, and this time the medium elected not to do a reading, clumsily insisting she was very booked and couldn't accommodate our request. I found this strange as I looked down on her table and saw that the sign-up sheet for readings
It was filled with holes all throughout her schedule. Seemed to me there was plenty of times that were still available, but whatever. Another day, another $50 saved. It wasn't until the third time we attempted to get a reading that I finally became incensed at the attitude of these supposed women of the light, as she called herself. She seemed disgusted by my request, and her face displayed a look like she was smelling something rotten. We walked off. My wife was utterly dismayed and could not wrap her head around this string of strange rejections. I spun on my heel and headed back to ask why the woman of the light was so dismissive and quick to push us on past. My wife followed closely behind, silently begging me not to confront the woman. "Hey, Esmeralda," I called out. "What's with the brush off? Why so rude? And what's up with the pinched face like you're smelling something foul?" I questioned. She bristled at my short and curt questioning, and I think became even more offended by me calling her Esmeralda. She informed me her name was Chastity. Of course it was. And that if I really wanted to know, she would tell me. I insisted on some kind of logical explanation. That is when she looked me dead in the eyes and said, "You have a very dark attachment, and I'm not willing to make a connection with you or with it." This response caught me off guard. "What the hell do you mean I have a dark attachment?" I barked. Man, you could have heard a pin drop. It seemed everyone within 100 feet of us stopped what they were doing and turned their attention to us. She shot me a very dirty glance for embarrassing her, and that pissed me off even more. She hushed me. Why was she embarrassed? I was the one shoved aside for some load of crap explanation. Then she looked me dead in the eyes. Let me guess. Short-tempered, always exhausted, no patience, and constant headaches. My wife and I were caught by the frankness of her answer, and we nodded. She then turned her gaze to my wife, and he wakes up from a lot of nightmares. Again, we nodded simultaneously. "You have an attachment, and it goes way back. It's big, dark, and very deeply rooted," she informed me. And with that, and a wave of her hand to dismiss us, she turned her back and sent us on our way. We were dumbfounded. I shook it off, or tried to, and went on a mini tirade to my wife about the fakery of this whole thing and told her in no uncertain terms I would not be attending these waste of time events with her again. To my surprise, she agreed that would be a good idea. And with that, our conversation was over. A few weeks later, we suffered a power outage at home due to heavy rains and storms moving through our area. We were living by tea light candles, and I grabbed one to make my way to the bathroom one night. I set it on the counter and went about my business. After relieving myself, I approached the sink to wash my hands, and after giving them a good once-over with soap and water, I turned my attention to the mirror, where I was shocked and horrified to see a massive, looming figure standing behind and above me. It was wispy and smoke-like, but was a fully formed humanoid figure. I stood there waiting for my eyes to adjust to the light and trying to calm my nerves. I was obviously having a low-light hallucination. That had to be what I was witnessing. That's when it shot me a menacing, toothy grin and slowly leaned over my shoulder and looked itself and me in our eyes. I could swear I could feel its hands on my shoulders. My breath was labored and panicked. I started to collect my thoughts, with the terror level in me steadily climbing. This was no dream. This was no hallucination. I could feel its hot breath on my neck, its claw-like hands on my shoulders, and I opened my mouth to scream. It lifted its crooked hand to its face, and with a single finger pressed to its mouth, it hissed, "Shh." And then I heard a low, rumbly laugh in my ear. Then it all went black. I hit the floor of my bathroom. I had passed out. I never could bring myself to tell my wife what happened, and I refused to look into mirrors in low light or candlelight. Every night as I lay in bed, the instant the lights go out, I squeeze my eyes closed and will not open them until morning light. All I can think is, what is this? And why is it with me? I'm too terrified to tell anyone or ask for help, since the 3 times I tried to speak to someone with abilities, I was just quickly shunned. What does this mean? Not only for the rest of my life, but in my afterlife, I'm left wondering, In what version of heaven will I ever be allowed to enter, knowing that attached to me, there's a very dark passenger?
It's just that simple. Send us your stories. And if you have a story that you've written as a narrative, you can email it to me, dave@darknessradio.com, and we may feature it on an upcoming Theater of the Mind. A Chepigny man is recovering in a hospital after falling off a motorcycle, having been scared by an instant flash of light from an alleged unidentified flying object witnessed in parts of Chepigny and Chimichani on Friday evening, Timmy. Not Chimichanga.
No.
Chimichinimani. I can't even say it. It's so many letters.
Hmm.
Yeah. Chimpichimchamari. Chimchimchari. I don't know. Now, recovering from a leg injury after being admitted to the Chepigny District Hospital on Saturday, 47-year-old Chepigny resident Richmond Mayambo is yet to come to terms with what he saw on Friday evening following a strange unidentified flying object. Mayambo fell from a motorbike when he witnessed a strange instant flashlight and a flash of light and a deafening sound that followed thereafter. I was traveling home on my motorbike at around 9 when I witnessed a strange light traveling in the sky. I tried to concentrate on riding, but what made me fall was the sound that followed after the light. I then fell off the bike due to panic. I thought I was dying. Mayambo initially thought it was one of those weird moments encountered at night before noticing a rocket-like object. I was 100% sober, but I was so confused because I thought I had encountered those strange things people see in the dark and in thick forests. The object looked like a rocket with fire coming from its back. While authorities are yet to establish whether the unidentified flying object landed or not, the feature has set tongues a-wagging amongst the Chepigny residents. Residents claim to have seen a bright light that was followed by a huge blow sound and a shaking, while others describe the event as a collision of two stars. We have audio from that, Tim. Are you ready?
Ready.
Not nearly as impressive as I thought it would be.
Not so much.
No. Especially if you think you're seeing two collisions of stars in the sky. Let's listen to that again.
Hmm.
Yeah, not that impressive.
No.
Meanwhile, the District Meteorological Services Department confirmed that indeed the strange feature was witnessed, but they have yet to release an official statement, Tim. And as we wrap up today's stories, Nessie, your worst nightmare, Tim, is back.
No.
A Nessie hunter spots two black humps, lovely lady bumps, 10 feet apart, rising up and down in the fourth official sighting of Loch Ness Monster this year. That's right, another official sighting of the Loch Ness Monster has been logged in Scotland, bringing this year's total up to 4. Ian O'Fagadin from Donegal, Ireland, claims he spotted two black hump shapes around 10 feet apart in the famed Highlands freshwater loch on Friday. The Nessie hunter, 56, said he noticed the objects rising up and down near Urquhart Castle, where sightings of the mythical beast are at the highest. Mr. O'Fagadin, holy cow, listen to this. O'Fagadin. Mr. O'Fadahagen, we'll go with that, has had 12 apparent sightings of the Loch Ness Monster recorded by the official Loch Ness Monster Sighting Registry since 2017. His latest capture by a Loch Ness webcam on March 12th. So we've got that story and video up as well, so you can go see it. Footage of the apparent encounter appears to show ripples moving through the water despite there being no boats out on the loch. Two breaks in the water then appear in a huge rough distance of 10 feet between them. The humps, the lovely lady bumps, Tim, slowly move over the surface of the water for an extended period of time before then again humping down into the water and disappearing. Mr. O'Fadahagen immediately sent his sighting across to the official Loch Ness Monster Sighting Register, who last night registered it as an official sighting. Speaking today, he said, while watching the webcam in the late afternoon, my attention was attracted to a disturbance in the water in the middle of the lake, a black shape that broke the surface with a wake. It was moving slowly, but was causing a lot of water agitation around it. Two black hump-like shapes seemed to be popping up and down as it cut its way to the surface of the loch. The object is viewed for a minute and 41 seconds. That's actually a lot of footage, Tim.
Yeah.
And then it just disappeared. There was no boat activity on the lake at the time of the sighting. He added, on my very first visit, I had a sighting of a large mottled brown hump near Intermortison in July of 1987. The sighting only intrigued me further into the Loch Ness Monster. I have now captured 12 sightings to date in the last 4 years. Mr. O'Fadahagan claims he also saw two black shapes about 10 feet apart splashing in the water on January 19th and January 22nd of this year. Another Nessie hunter, Kalen Wangel from Oregon in the U.S., logged the first sighting of 2021 on January 11th when she noticed a V-shape in the loch that only appeared for a few seconds. The 27-year-old sighting shows a black blur near the front of the bay for the webcam beside a tree. There were 13 alleged sightings of the monster last year, including one involving a heavily contested photograph that some claim was faked. Last September, researchers from New Zealand claimed the Loch Ness Monster could be a large eel, extracting DNA from water samples to test for this. Research carried out in 2018 revealed that the mythical $41 million a year to the Scottish economy.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of do-re-mi.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, that's it for today. Tim, tomorrow is April 1st. The dawning of spring is upon us. And with the dawning of spring, new cryptid creatures. Tomorrow, we're going to invite listeners in to uncover the secrets of the Sasquatch and the White Plains Dune Feet. So make sure you tune in tomorrow for that program. It is going to be interesting, to say the least. We want to thank our special guest, Terry Carnation of the Carnation Nation and the hit radio show Dark Air, which can be heard wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. So make sure that you go subscribe and listen to Dark Air with Terry Carnation, as portrayed by Rainn Wilson. It was a pleasure having him on the show today. Tim, it was great to have him on and visiting. A lot of fun today.
Yes, it was, most definitely.
Very cool. Stay safe, everyone. We will be back again tomorrow with a brand new episode. And then we're off this Thursday night. No live stream, no additional episode on Friday, because I will be in Florida with my bio dad, making sure that he's doing well with his second COVID shot. So keep him in your thoughts and prayers. And we will be back at full steam again next week, right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave. That's Tim. This is Darkness Radio.